Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was hell or
hell. Lemon face. Ooh, face.
All right. The same four dudes.
I just need surface level shit.
Give me that surface level bullshit. Yeah. Except for like the if the dog is trickster, then it's just, cool.
Service me with that. You are gonna fucking level. Learn, I'm telling you.
Welcome to the
You should have.
I already did that.
Welcome to the Who Goes There podcast, episode 228. This is Jorge.
This is Matt.
Oh, he did the robot.
Please sit on my this is face. Rhett.
Please sit on my face.
That's good shit. So, Rhett, did you go to the lemon party?
The lemon party?
You didn't.
No. Okay. You're talking about online shit?
Yeah, dude.
No, I didn't look it up.
I didn't look it up.
I was listening to that conversation did today, you go to and it reminded me.
Lemon party?
Nah, I gotta look this up. I gotta look up cake farts. I mean, I got a lot of homework.
Cake farts.
I'll come back completely depraved.
And that's why we get a 2-star review on iTunes.
It's literally what I like the most.
Actually, speaking of that, y'all, if you haven't reviewed us on iTunes and you're still listening and you enjoy our shit, could you please throw up a review on iTunes to battle the shitheads that give us 1- and 2-star reviews? Because fuck them.
Yeah, a bunch of dicks.
God, don't have non-fun having assholes.
I mean, and like, if you're gonna give us a 1- or 2-star review, at least like write an actual review so we know what you didn't like. You know, like, not that we're gonna give a fuck or change anything, but it would just be nice to know why you're such a little bitch. Just saying.
Well, see, I wish I had not known about this.
What?
1- or 2-star reviews
it's
on
gonna,
iTunes.
It's gonna eat him it happens. Alive now.
I feel like Travolta in The Fanatic about this.
The thing is, like, is that I think that if you're gonna give me a 1-star review, then just don't review it. Like, why? Like, did you really dislike it that much?
Hell
just
yeah.
Move on.
No, I mean, that's fine.
I'm kind of honored though that they disliked it that much.
Give it 1 star, but at least tell me why. That's it. That's all I care about.
That's all you really care about?
Yeah.
They're not going to waste their breath. They just want us to fail.
Maybe you make valid points.
They want us to fail.
That's fucking cool, though. Yeah. Good job.
No, see, because then I just assume it's just like those people from that other show, and they're just trying to sink our momentum. Like, I see what they're fucking doing.
You see what they're doing? You know what they're doing?
Don't send your fans over here.
Someone asked me the other day, they're like, what is that other show that Matt always talks about? And I go, I can't say.
There's only like 2 people that know. I mean, like, besides like people associated with this show, there's only like 2 Patreon people that know.
Anywho, what's up, guys?
Fucking same old shit, dog. Same old shit.
Yeah?
I say that every week, but I mean, it's always true.
Nothing changes for you.
Nope. But
Ollie is getting better.
Ollie went back to work, thank God. Like, I don't mean that to be negative. I love having her around the house, but it's just like, you know, I don't do stuff that I want to do, like when she's home. Not saying that I do what she wants to do, but we just kind of do nothing. But it's like, if I want to play video games or something,
the momentum is that there
like,
is none.
I should just spend time with my wife. So like, the fact that she's back at work means I got my mornings back and I can play Dead by Daylight and work on videos again. So
Vidges.
That's pretty tight.
Cool.
I'm into that.
You watched anything?
I did. I don't have the fucking list, but so I know I watched a movie called Eat Locals. I want to say it was a Telluride horror show release a few years ago. And I think I remember Jacob Seaver talking about how much he liked it. That movie's pretty fucking great, dude. It's like a vampire movie. It's not as silly as What We Do in the Shadows. And it really treads the line between a serious movie, but just like absolute absurdity. Like, it feels like it's supposed to be serious, but then there's a point where there's like a fucking flying chicken that bacocks across the screen, or like a flaming chicken that bacocks across the screen.
Bacock.
Bacock.
You're a bacock. Bukaki. Shut up. Leave
but
it alone.
It's
Wait a minute.
That's a really fun movie. I rewatched Dead Detectives.
Why?
Didn't you say it was boring as fuck?
You said it was terrible.
It was. Ollie wanted to watch it, you know, and so I watched it with her. And it's definitely better the second time. Like, I don't know if it was just because I watched it at work or if I was just like,
that's strange,
in, you know, in a bad mood, like, you know, odd. Like George when he watched Laid to Rest.
Yeah,
but like I watched it a second time, I'm like, all right, it's not as cheesy as I thought. Like some of the jokes hit a little better. I mean, it's true, dude.
Wow, he's Matt the apologist for dead detectives.
And then there was another movie called The Furies. Did I talk about that last week?
The Furies?
Yeah, did I talk about that last week?
Not that I remember.
So it's like, it's kind of like the Hunger Games in a sense, where these women get kidnapped and then they wake up in the woods where like there's these big boxes and each box says like beauty number one, beauty number two, but there's also boxes that say beast number one, beast number two. And basically it's an elimination style thing, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm, if a mm-hmm. woman dies, her corresponding, it's Beauty and the Beast, so her corresponding beast dies as well.
Tale as old as time.
But if the beast dies, the woman doesn't die. And it's really fucking bloody and really fun. It's nothing super great, but it's definitely a
super great.
It's definitely a fun watch. And then Patreon homie James Thompson reminded me of a movie that I saw called The Boat, and that movie's fucking terrible. I know we talked about that before, where the boat like basically catches and releases people.
Ooh, I like, man, that.
It's so bad. It's so fucking bad. So bad.
Das Boot.
Yeah. And then more Mindhunter. That's really bad.
What, did you finish that up?
No, I think we have like one or two more episodes.
So I finished the second season.
You hadn't watched any of it last week.
Yeah.
You were texting about
it. So I finished the second season. I am not as in love with this season as the first.
It's a little more about the actual cops themselves and a little less about the killers. More of a character study.
Motherfucker, I stand corrected.
Well, I'm not just... Got him. I just don't want you to go on and on about this being fucking Biff.
Got him.
Listeners.
I guess. So, anywho...
Oh, he was in Heroes, too.
So Tench's story, I think, is a little bit more... I think it's a little bit more poignant to me, and I think it has a little bit more impact. Holden just comes off like a little whiny bitch baby.
Yeah, I just don't care about
him. I don't care about anything.
Holla, kind of holla, also holla, little bitch. Okay, Holden is the shit.
I feel like they've let Holden kind of just fade into the background so they can really focus on Tench this season.
I think they understood you can't have Holden carry this by himself because he's not that likable to people.
I don't even think he's not unlikable. I just think his story is so like, oh, he's going to be cold to his girlfriend because he's so calculating and so like, so
detached. Well,
and he detached, was likable in the first season because he navigated the minds of the serial killers.
What, like, they're showing pretty well here to me is he's not unemotional. He's just not in touch with his emotions. He represses a lot of shit.
Okay.
Hence the anxiety disorder. That's what happens. Shit comes up. You push it down, it comes up some way, somewhere.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, like, that's probably obvious to you. But to me, I don't think it. I mean, there's stuff to look for in the show. I could see what you're saying about how you prefer the first season to this one. But I think I respect that they didn't go completely sensationalized with it, because I got to think this is rooted in true stuff.
Right.
I'm sure they've taken liberties. But I respect that they didn't like just keep taking a shitload of liberties and realize, let's make this more at the characters instead of
they're not
saying throw all the serial killers that fucking ever existed.
And they're not getting fucking information out of every single serial killer, like where they're like, oh my god, we've discovered the fucking water.
Right.
With every single
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah. I like that it's gone away from the sort of like procedural, like we meet a killer, then we find some info, and then we add to our file of that stuff's. I'm okay with that, but yeah. I think that Holden has like he's almost gone so far into the meme that I'm like losing touch on.
You know him what else?
Being a fun character.
There's a lot less reliance this season on Kemper.
Yeah.
Which again,
is kind of a bummer because he was such a fascinating character.
Well, it's a bummer, but it's ballsy of them because they're like, we can't rely completely on that.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Yeah. We can come back to it.
Like the Manson stuff was pretty good. It was pretty good.
That guy did a good Manson, but at the same time, it's like, what's the point of bringing in a character like Charles Manson if you're only going to feature him for 15 minutes?
Well, yeah. So what they did was they gave you basically three killers that had no well, I guess if you don't count Manson, but they gave you two killers that don't have a motive, so to speak. Like they're just killing as it happens.
Yeah, because they're trying to gather as much data and study as much as they can.
Yeah.
About this issue. Yeah, because they've obviously considered a lot of ways of going about this that weren't there before their department. Nonetheless, when it comes to these guys that don't have a clear, understandable fucking motive,
it throws them off.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So
that stuff's fine. Yeah. I mean, I like what's her name going off kind of on her own with that other agent. I don't remember
his name. Yeah, but it didn't do a whole lot.
But it doesn't do a whole lot. And her whole thing with dating that girl from the bar, and I go, fuck, dude. And then that whole thing where, you know,
I thought that all that was really interesting.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's exactly fine.
It's literally just fine.
You motherfuckers, dude.
I mean, I haven't seen the end yet. I just looked. I have two more episodes left.
I've stopped short of...
Yeah.
You know what, dude? Don't even finish it.
It ain't worth it. What about you, Rhett?
Huh?
Have you watched anything?
I went to the Ken Cinema here in San Diego for a midnight showing of Reservoir Dogs, which was cool.
Yeah.
You know, having seen the new Tarantino this summer, it was cool to go back. Midsummer?
Yeah, we saw it midsummer.
We did, yeah. It was nice to watch that in a theater. And you know how when we were talking about that Tarantino movie real quick, like for me the point of reference was like it being kind of a spiritual sequel to Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
This, like, it made me really realize, oh, Hateful Eight. You know? Like, he revisited the whole chamber piece, like, with Hateful Eight.
Right.
Because it's isolated to one in one place. There's these people thrown in this situation together. They're not clear of each other's motives, all that kind of thing. So, anyway, it crossed my mind while watching it. But that was nice to watch that in the theater. And there's some fucking dialogue in this movie that people were very uncomfortable with watching this in a theater in 2019. Regarding racial slurs.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Tarantino movie.
It is. It was fucking, but we're in like Adams Avenue at midnight.
Yeah, I bet that
did. So people didn't laugh the first one. I did because it's fuck. I'm sorry. But it's like you said, it's a Tarantino movie.
Are you talking about Around the Table at the Diner?
Yeah.
That shit is hilarious.
Yeah, well, and also later on where they're not, everyone's at each other's throats and Steve Buscemi comes in and says, you guys are acting like, you know, a bunch of blah, blah, blah. He says something very, very, you know, a thing, and it's a bad thing to say, but, you know.
If see me, I would have said it.
Well, because he's... yeah, too. Well, you say that.
We've earned enough cred.
Yeah, I've got enough street cred that I can, you know...
Well, fucked up, because I've actually been to detox and jail. I'm more ghetto than both you motherfuckers, but I'm not.
What makes you think I...
You're not more ghetto, you're more white trash.
Yeah.
That's not correct. White trash... I'm not white trash.
What makes you think I ain't been locked up, motherfucker?
White trash doesn't... They don't have... You haven't been locked up for a DUI or what?
Nope. I've been locked up for something else that I'm not going to get into because it's no longer on my record, so it's irrelevant.
And that ain't even Patreon content.
I'm going to look it up.
You can't.
That shit's expunged, dog. You got that shit expunged? Dog. Fuck yeah, I did. I'm trying to be a criminal for the rest of my life?
Well, my shit's not expunged. But anyway...
It could be, dude.
It was everyone was on edge laughing at that. But, you know, if Sam Jackson's okay with it, then things are all right.
All right. What else?
I feel like I'm skipping something.
Okay.
No, it's not horror.
Then we don't care.
Yeah, you do.
We kind of don't.
Short Circuit.
Second
one's way better. The first one fucking sucks.
Whoa. Yeah, they're both
moving on.
Johnny Five.
Johnny Five,
best horror movie that year.
Johnny Five when he joins Los Locos.
That's in part two, yeah.
Yeah,
part two. Part two
one,
is great.
Part one sucks. It's that bullshit love story between Steve Guttenberg and what's her tits.
Stephanie.
And then, like, yeah.
Who makes spaghetti pasta?
A star. We do. We do.
See what? Dog.
I just like what you're doing.
Who keeps Martians under wraps?
I don't know the next line, but. What have you watched?
Fuck. Well, Mindhunter, all of it.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
That was a lot of viewing. I did watch The Fanatic.
Yes, the Who Goes There podcast. All watched The Fanatic, and to find out what we thought about that, you can sign up for Patreon at patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast because we just recorded an episode on The Fanatic before this. So this episode's probably going to be very low energy because all of our energy went to that.
We adrenaline.
We had to fucking early. Exercise the demons.
Yeah.
For that,
we had to skeet out the demons.
That was a very good skeet.
Dude, that was crazy, man. I felt a little delirious about halfway through talking about that movie.
It's like, is this real life?
But that's a good Patreon. Tidbit.
Hope you guys might have that before this episode comes up. You might never get it. Who knows?
Oh boy. Algo más, mijo?
So I did want to mention something. Friend of the podcast, Graham Denman, is finally getting a world premiere for his first ever directorial debut, Greenlight. That's cool as fuck, man. It's going to premiere at Los Angeles Shriek Fest Film Festival, which starts. It opens the festival this Friday, not this Friday, but Friday, September 27th. So if you're in LA, go watch Graham's directorial debut, Greenlight. I know he is very passionate about this movie and he's been shopping it for a while. So it's cool to see the homie getting some success.
Oh, we forgot to mention we've got a new Patreon homie this week.
Yeah, we do.
Can you guys stop referring to them as homies?
No, fuck no. Homies, dog. You don't know me, homie.
What's wrong with you?
Corey Keelan. But I feel like
he is
Corey,
not. No.
He's not
he's
a,
an, he's a new homie.
Oh, well, welcome to the fold, dog.
Yes. Can we stop referring to them as homies? No. You can stop.
Can you kindly suck this
quite
dick?
Quite a few listeners messaged me that. They didn't want to ask you guys.
To stop calling them homies? Tell them they can turn that shit off, dog. You don't know me.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe not.
You know why? Because I
maybe go fuck yourself.
I love my homies. That's why.
That's right, dude.
Homies got mad love.
I love my homies, too.
Yeah. Homies. You gotta put an A on it like you mean it.
Yeah, it's gotta be the AO. You gotta get the fucking
Howmy. Yeah, dog. It's Chula Vista shit right there.
I love Patreon.
I love the fellows of Patreon. The
fellers.
What tarnation?
If you're gonna be in New York at New York Comic Con, they have Killer Clowns from Outer Space Pops now, which look cool as fuck. I don't know why all of a sudden Killer Clowns are everywhere, but it's pretty rad. They got a Halloween Horror Nights maze. There's all kinds of exclusive merch coming out now.
I feel like the last 5-6 years, Killer Clowns have just
gets more and more popular.
Everywhere.
Which, I mean, I'm glad, but like, you know, y'all fucking normies trying to appropriate my clown culture. Like,
I think if you go to New York Comic Con, you can see our homie Scarecrow Oven. He's always there.
I literally just messaged him. I'm like, yo, I need one of these clowns. Dog.
Maybe it was just the prevalence of killer clowns that increased. We had those clown sightings. You had fucking Pennywise.
There's actually a documentary coming out about that called...
You talked about that last week.
Did I?
Yeah.
Wrinkles the Clown?
Yeah.
Oh, or Sprinkles the Clown or something like that.
Yeah.
Wrinkles the Clown?
Sprinkles and Jingles.
Sprinkle Genie the Clown.
Cool.
What else? There's a new Resident Evil game being made, and it's a spinoff called Project Resistance, and it's a team-based survival horror.
Uh-huh.
I think it's something along the line. They did one of those before. It was called, I don't fucking remember, Project Outbreak, I think. Yeah, Project Outbreak. So it's kind of like a Left 4 Dead style 4-player co-op survival thing.
You know, I'm really digging all these imbalanced co-op games that are coming out.
Dog, if only you ever played them.
You know, homie.
Get on Dead by Daylight.
Play it like opposite times of when I can play.
Dog, get on my level. I'll play whatever time.
I'm at work when you're playing.
You can still watch movies at work. Just saying.
What?
Speaking of video games, the PT demo, which was supposed to be Silent Hill, somebody discovered that via hacking.
Yeah,
that what's her name? I think it's Lisa. Is right behind you the whole time, the whole fucking time. If this game wasn't already creepy enough, like that just adds is, a whole
do you still have it on your PS3?
I never had it. Like, that's the thing. Like, it was on PS4, I think.
Oh, on your PS4.
And I didn't have the PS4 until after that had already been taken off the market.
Yeah, I really wish they would.
That's just... why I got the fucking PS4, and they took it off the market.
Like, I really wish they would re-release it. I feel like they will eventually.
No, they won't, because that's Kojima split with Konami, so that shit's never going to see the night.
I don't know. So, dude, somebody's going to... Some, they'll
We watched a Kojima! super fascinating YouTube video about how, like, this was never actually a preview for the new Silent Hills. This was more
game.
No, this was more of Kojima telling the story of what's going on at Konami and him just like burning his bridge and like just explaining all this shit. Like, when you watch it, I mean, it's just another one of those YouTube conspiracy theory videos, but it seems to have like a lot of weight to it, and it's really, really interesting.
Well, so, he's also working on a Death Stranding game, which looks interesting. I hope the gameplay is a little bit better than what the demos are showing.
Yeah.
So far, I'm a little disinterested, but the concept looks cool. You would like it, like the idea of it.
Why is that?
It's like cosmic horror.
Yeah,
stuff.
I would like
it's
that.
It's got a bunch of like,
like Lovecraft type
2001 Space Odyssey weird shit. There's like babies that are like being incubated and fucking incubators.
Why don't you like it?
Well, I just wonder what the gameplay is going to be, because
it looks like
it's just a bunch of walking around, and I don't know what the sort of like the
if it's just all atmosphere,
right.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a game, the gameplay is important.
Yep.
If the gameplay sucks on the game,
You goofed.
Yeah, you fucked up. Like Tecmo Bowl, I don't like football, but Tecmo Bowl is fucking great.
Yeah, Mutant League Football, man.
There you go.
Shit's a jam. And then the final piece of news is also video game news. The Legend of Bumbo has a release date.
Yep.
November 12th. So if you like Binding of Isaac, which we do,
which
this is the prequel to Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, it's a, from what I understand, it's a three match game. And it's sort of like it's a roguelite, as you know, as per Edmund. And it looks like fun.
Yeah, it says it's a puzzle-based deck builder with roguelike aspects.
Mm-hmm. This is the game that both of you mentioned in kind of your top five ever, huh?
Yeah. Binding of Isaac? Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah. Like, I mean, just the sheer amount of hours I've plugged into that game. And I remember when we first started doing this podcast, George told me about it. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever,
like,
dude.
I'll play it eventually. Yeah. And then after, like, I think 3 or 4 months, he was finally like, look, I have a download code here. Just try it out. And then it was like, God damn it. Like, I've spent collectively, Ollie and I have put over 5,000 hours.
Yeah. Ronnie and I are very much the same. When she was pregnant, that's what we kind of did on like our fun time together, because we weren't doing much. I remember my first mom kill, I texted her like, oh my God, I killed mom. Jesus Christ.
Dude, I remember she texted you while we were doing an episode, and it was something like, got all the way to Satan and died.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy, man. It's you might even like it, because it's
simple, but it's got a really good story that you discover very, very slowly.
Gotcha.
It's Legend of Zelda E.
Right.
So I think you would dig it.
Yeah. No, it's more of like a top down dungeon explorer.
What do you have? What do you have, any video game? Anything?
I'm not even telling you. No, I have a Super Nintendo, a refurbished Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Wii.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what?
Do you have an iPhone?
No.
Oh,
you need to get a Switch.
No, we're on the same
team. I do need to get a Switch, because now they have all the fucking Super Nintendo games.
Yeah,
on there.
Dude. Yeah. Yes.
Maybe
yes.
You and I will get.
I do like
together.
Having a refurbished Super Nintendo, putting the cartridges in, Super Metroid, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy 3. You know, that's it.
Nothing. You need to get your ass a Switch.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It's a great system.
Well, and when they come out with a new fucking Metroid game...
Or you need to get your ass a Grooves Cube.
Because it's been long enough. They're supposedly developing a new Metroid game. And
I would hope so, for Christ's sake.
Well, what was that Metroid Other M? That was not up to snuff.
Yeah. All right, anything else?
Nope.
Cool.
Esto.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back to talk about... we're going to talk about It. Holy shit.
It too, yeah. That's the thing. The discussion about the Fanatic has overshadowed.
I had forgotten
the fact that we're talking.
It felt like
about
we were going to talk about it next week. I remembered on the way over here. Yep.
Damn. I forgot completely. All right. Cool. We'll see how this goes. The Who Goes There podcast watched 2019's It Chapter 2. Directed. Hold on, just
Muschietti.
Muschietti. Directed by
Giuseppe Patri.
Gorlami.
Giuseppe is dead, man.
Why are you never prepared?
Written, directed by Andy Muschietti. Screenplay written by Gary Dauberman, and obviously written the based on a novel written by Stephen King.
Stefan, with a
starring
PH.
Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy, Bill Hader, Isaiah Mustafa, Jay Ryan, James Ransone, Andy Bean, Bill Skarsgård, Jaden Martell, Wyatt Olef,
and written by Fred Durst,
Jack Dylan Grazer, Finn Wolfhard, Sophia Lillis, Chosen Jacobs. James,
they
Jeremy,
don't all need acknowledgement.
Ray Taylor.
It's a great cast.
So, It Chapter 2 basically is the adult chapter of this saga. It starts right at the end of the first one. And you know the story, basically. Matt Smith.
Yeah.
What'd you think of It Chapter 2?
I definitely did not like it as much as I liked the first one. I thought that there was ill-placed humor that just really killed the tension that the movie fought so hard to build. I thought that the CGI was fucking terrible, and it was way too long. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I've honestly forgotten more than this movie or more about this movie than I'm gonna remember. I wanted to watch it again. I just didn't have a chance because it's almost 3 fucking hours yeah. long.
As opposed to something like The Fanatic, which is a clean hour and 29 minutes.
Yeah. Clean as fuck.
Rady Rhett?
I have mixed feelings about the movie. I don't think the CGI is bad. I just think there's way too much of it. Anytime the movie starts lagging, it does things like, oh, here's a curtain. They pull the curtain back. Nothing's there. They pull it back again. Oh, there's something there. It does this. It's a very repetitive movie. And when it starts lagging like that, they're like, call in the CGI department and give me some elaborate spectacle, which is, I think the spectacle stuff in this movie's more about spectacle than dread or fear, honestly, to me.
Yeah.
So as a horror film, I don't know if that was intended, but that's definitely, it's big budget, huge budget horror film. And it shows. I think the cast they assembled was pretty impressive. However, some of them were kind of wasted to me. Bill Hader, his character. Which one does he play? I forget the name. Richie. He fucking takes off with the whole movie. I thought he was great. And he's killing it on that show, Barry, supposedly. I haven't watched it. But, yeah. As far as too long, I get why it's long. I don't think that the midsection of this film was, there's things that I needed 5 minutes and they gave me 15 over right. and over again.
Yeah.
And by the time I get to the climax, I'm a little fucking spent because yep. I'm seeing shit I saw in the
me
first
too.
One.
Am I right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Like it was hard to come.
And there it is.
Yeah.
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 It was like when you're drunk and you're just fucking just, forever and then you finally just say, you know what, this isn't going to happen.
And she's hot. Like she's, you know, everything. Like it was it's a well done night. Yeah. It's just.
She may laugh stupid.
It's
but.
So weird. Like it should be easy,
you know,
but it's
not. I went into it really happy about the really long runtime because I was hoping that they were going to do some really fantastic things with the time.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I feel like it was too long, a bit too cute, and I don't know, man. I left a little disappointed, and I'm not going to get into the memery of like, this is the fucking worst thing I've ever seen, because I think that's a little bit like...
No,
it's
I
not.
Think it's a little bit like, that's a little cute.
It feels like a huge box office blockbuster sequel. And it is.
It wasn't bad, but it was just the first one was so good and so well done that it just did not live up to that at all. It was a really weak finish to a really great start.
Yeah. And there's some truly great stuff in this film. I mean,
the set pieces, yeah.
Set pieces are great. Like, you know, they're doing things that are from the book that you're kind of like, wow, they really fucking went for it. Like the lumberjack thing. That I was not expecting that to be a scene that was fun, but it was a good scene. But they also had a tendency to put things from the book that don't have the payoff that they do in the book. Because one of my main issues is, so in the beginning of the movie, you have that gay couple that gets, they get their asses kicked by some fucking
locals.
Some locals, yeah. Right? And the whole idea in the movie is that, oh, like now it is going after adults now. Like that's the scary thing. But in reality, the scary thing about that gay couple, and this the book is set in a time when gay couples being outwardly,
yeah, it was early 80s,
being right? outwardly gay was not exactly like a, you know,
it's much more taboo than
it's more much more taboo. So it was especially it in was rural more areas. It more dealt with the rotten underbelly of Derry, right. And not just some fucking random punks who then threw a gay dude into a river who got eaten by Pennywise.
Like, so that, there was a reason for it to be there.
Yeah,
I honestly thought that was one of the more impactful scenes of the movie, just because like those blows when they were getting their asses kicked, you felt those.
Yeah.
Sound design.
That's part of the production value.
Was so well done that I felt like I was getting my ass kicked.
And that's the thing too. I feel like that scene is so impactful, but then all of the goodwill of it, so to speak. I don't that was not the right goodwill. I don't think that was the right word, but I mean I just think that like the momentum that scene had carried with it kind of just peters out, and there's no balls behind it to not, I don't know, man.
Here, first third of the movie, I was actually very engaged. I get what you're saying about the intro, and I don't know if it was necessary to have that and et cetera, like that, but well, you know, it was there and it worked for me. It worked enough. The fact that they were a gay, I didn't know if that was specifically from the book or whatnot, because I haven't read it. But when it got to the second act, like when everyone's assembled after the Chinese restaurant, which I'm sorry, they did a great fucking job on that.
I thought that was really, 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 I mean, fun.
It was creative. The CG looked stupid.
I'm stoked as hell that they did the fucking eyeball in the fortune cookie.
There was one too where Mike's character is telling James McAvoy the whole thing about the Indians, and they did a flashback sequence with like a fucking bird and some shit that, like, I don't know if you guys, I liked that because I was like, this is fucking crazy.
Is that in the book?
Yeah, so there's
a lot of mythology that's not in the movie, right?
Yeah. The space turtle. Yeah, and we'll talk about
the intergalactic spider, though.
Sorta. And if that's
what it's supposed to look like, I'm not impressed.
I've got some straight up niggles with that ending. And
you
we'll
say that.
We'll
yeah,
what?
No, that's so fine.
That's what I'm talking about with Reservoir Dogs, man. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. So yeah, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Did you?
No, I interrupted you.
What was I saying?
You said you have some niggles, and I said you can't say that.
Before that.
Oh, yeah. So look. They get this. Everyone's got to go find their totem, right?
Yeah.
And so they have to revisit that summer where they were separate from one another.
That midsummer.
This is where it, like, I was thinking about it. It's a structure problem, because it's a 3-hour movie with the structure is actually very flimsy.
Yeah.
That whole midsection, which is the bulk of the film, is them finding their totem, revisiting their thing, which makes, I get it, that's fine, but not all of those scenes work.
No, and in fact, the movie is strongest when the cast is all together.
Yeah.
So when they separate and they all go off to find their totem, that's where I'm like, oh.
Well, here's the most damning thing to me. There's a couple of them right there. Like, I already know, it's telling me shit that was already established in the first movie. I know you need to touch on it and remind me. But, like, yeah, I know James McAvoy fucking laments his brother getting eaten. I don't need to spend, he doesn't, I don't need to see him put his hand down the fucking drain for 15 minutes. Like,
the problem is there's so many, like, main characters in this story, and each one of them needs their own little story. So they all need their little story where they get their totem. They all need their story where they're introduced and this is what they're up to now. They all need the phone call from Mike. Like, every single one of them has their own bit broken down.
Yeah.
And it just gets really fucking boring. It's like,
well, and it feels
release like it as an online show and give me like Mike's story and then Bev's story and then so and so's story.
What almost feels like they're limited by time here, because they want to really they want to make sure that you're like emotionally invested in this, which is admirable.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of the attempts to create emotional investment are, I'm sorry, they're kind of corny. A lot of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where it has McAvoy, like, drowning his, I forget his character's name. He's drowning his
Georgie.
In his internal vision state and whatever. Like, that's a heavy scene on paper.
And it looks goofy.
Well, yeah. It looks goofy and it just doesn't have much weight. And that's a heavy fucking scene.
Well, and the same with, like, the love stories that's going on between Bev and Ben and whoever the other guy was. As adults, like, I don't give a fuck about these people. What made the first one so good, or part of what made the first one so good, is that these are children that all this stuff is happening to. So this blossoming love story, it's like your first love. We can all relate to that. And like, you know, building friendships and feeling like an outcast. But now that they're all grown up, it's like, well, I don't fucking care about you. You know, like imagine if there was an episode of South Park where the kids all grew up and then suddenly you've got like these 40-year-olds that are saying fuck. Like,
and not,
it's
and not
impactful because they're in fourth grade.
And not only that, the biggest issue with it is that so they supposedly lose their memory after leaving Derry.
Right.
Right.
So the characters that you're introduced to,
which is a potentially interesting wrinkle.
Right.
Yeah.
But the characters that you're introduced to, at least in this film, the my problem is that they act exactly like they do in their previous life, so as children. So it's the same characters. You're not gleaning any new info about these people.
So it's very repetitive.
Yeah, so Bev is still, you know, Bev is still a very damaged woman who, you know,
an abusive picks
the wrong man. And I know as humans we tend to gravitate towards things that we dealt with in our childhood.
You appreciate the themes. Yeah, the themes are all there.
So, and like you said, it feels like you're introduced to these characters and there's no development there.
Yeah.
And so you're getting introduced to these characters and you're like, okay, they're the exact same people. So,
but they're not endearing.
Well, the one with the best arc, again, like to mention, it was Bill Hader. He's different at the end of the film than he is at the beginning. And then we have that whole thing about, you know, latent homosexuality, you know, which is an interesting addition.
Did I miss that?
Yeah, you did. Because and the thing is it's
he was
it's
in love with that guy.
It's with what guy?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, Richie was in love with who?
I'm in love with both of them.
Oh, he was in love with the little
Stanley.
Risk analyst guy. Oh, wait, with Stanley?
The guy who was still there. Sorry, not Stanley.
They were always talking shit because they wanted to bone.
I mean, like,
Yachty.
I don't want to fuck George, but I always talk. Oh, let me rephrase that. Like, I don't want to fuck Rhett, but I'm always talking shit to Rhett.
He does want to fuck me, though.
I mean, again?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that whole thing where he's got sort of his unrequited love for Eddie.
That's why.
Is this canon or is this just something?
It's not in the book, but it's canon for the movie.
Because like, Pennywise, he's like, I know your deep, dirty secret. Like, it's already alluded to by there.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I missed that.
You know the thing that pisses
me? So wait,
he goes in the fucking trees, like carving initials. That's true.
Is this a thing, like, in the book?
Nope. Not at all.
Like, the thing is this, it's love. Is this it's like, not that it's gay. It's love is love, okay?
Is this fallout?
Did you see Brokeback
is this
not?
Fallout from the fucking kid gangbang? Like, did he fall in love with Eddie, like, during the gangbang that wasn't shown?
The gangbang has been replaced by this.
By the love story? That's what I'm saying. Is this fallout from the gangbang?
Basically, the gangbang has been replaced by looking for the totems. Is kind of like the idea. Like, see, that's the ritual of Chud.
I didn't even think about, like, when he was carving the name at the end. I was just like, okay, like, that's him and his friend. I don't know why they're together. And, like, oh, that makes sense as to why it was, like, he was recarving it.
Yeah.
He'd done that before, and now he's like, no, I still love it. What?
Yeah.
That's
why I'm saying he has the best arc in the movie.
I mean, but why, though? Like,
well, I mean, I
think they decided to give someone a fucking arc. That's why.
Well, you know what? They were like, let's give someone some fucking.
Well, and the movie begins with like that is a topic in a sense, the opening scene, and it kind of ends.
See,
with
and
that
that's
as
the thing,
topic.
Dude. The thing.
I mean,
sort
that
of,
that makes him infinitely more interesting. Then.
The thing that irritates
and
me
the
is
fucking
that
actor did
they
great.
They don't. So again, and I don't want to be like, well, they're using gay people as a plot device.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna use sexuality as a plot device, don't serve it up to me twice. Like, I think...
It needs to have a good reason, a good organic reason for being there, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I'm pretty okay with that side story. I'm okay.
I'm just mad. I thought that was fine. Kiss now. Yeah. It's like, if you're gonna give me that, at least like have them have like a really sweet goodbye.
That would be, that would have been dope.
Right?
The thing that pisses me off, that I am the most pissed off about this movie, is that fucking bullshit ending with Stanley's suicide being because he wanted to get the old team back together. That pisses me off.
He knew that they had to bad. They would have to be all on the same page, and he was just too much of a chicken to fucking go through with it.
That so fucking took himself out of the equation. That fucking irritates me because it takes all of the steam out of these people being terrified.
Well, that's, well, also, that's also going the back movie, to Gary. The movie has wanted it both ways the entire time, too. It wants to be cloying and sentimental, then it wants to be terrifying. It wants to give you like these dark insights about human nature and childhood, and
but
how
then also
we,
give
we,
you
we
give
use
you
like our a, trauma
and
against
then give
our
you a
fears.
Vomit scene at the same time.
Well, see, that's exactly another example of what I was talking about, where and they keep letting the steam off. Is that leper scene? You know, that's supposed to be one of like the
dude,
creepiest
and it's got
scenes.
That little song soundbite.
That,
like,
that's what I'm saying. When he pukes in his face, which is like a silly, like new Ghostbusters gag anyways, and then it has "Just Call Me Angel." I'm like, why? Like, is that a
pero
fucking,
por qué?
Yeah, is that a fucking thing?
That was like an Adam McKay fucking thing. Like, that was like the Big Short and shit. You know what I mean? I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
And
here?
The leper's tongue, like, sticking out. Like, I mean, I get that Pennywise is a clown and clowns are supposed to be funny, but this movie is supposed to be terrifying, and there's so much that gets put into making it really tense and uncomfortable, and then they're just like, oh, sorry, we got a little too dark, like we're going to
let the steam out.
Well, yeah.
And then the other, speaking of that kind of stuff, that midsection again, they show that each time they do one of these things with a character, they all encounter Pennywise.
Right.
So we see Pennywise over and over and over again in encounters in different forms.
But I would argue that we didn't see him nearly enough.
In fact, every time he becomes less menacing because he's waited 27 years. I've missed you, you know, and blah, blah, blah. He's full on going to kill adults now. And all he does is moderately kind of fuck with them the entire middle section of the movie.
And well, then
he's
they
very non-threatening.
They defeat him by hurting his feelings.
Hold on.
Oh,
no, I didn't want to get there yet.
Hold on. Let's put a pause on that because I got some fucking things.
Yeah, because I need to know how in
what's
the book
not,
they defeat
what's
him.
Not really, what's not really shown in this film is that Pennywise feeds on fear. Not just human flesh.
No, they
but his,
tell you. That
well,
he
the
feeds
flesh
up here.
Is pumped full of fucking stuff. I
right.
Mean, it's,
so
that's
the
why
whole
likes-
idea, the whole idea behind him sort of like goofing on him in this film is to sort of like stir them up a little bit to like marinate them.
I understand the idea of it.
Yeah. No,
in practice, though, it becomes it's again by the climax is spent too much time. It's too repetitive.
Yeah,
and he's less menacing.
Yeah. No, dude. When we get to fucking Spider-Wise, I'm so
like, man. When he ate that little girl at the beginning, I was like, fuck yeah, he just chomped this cute
I didn't think they were, I thought they were gonna save that little girl, and I'm
that
like,
scene
oh,
is
yeah.
one of the highlights, like one of the few highlights of this film where you're like, dude, this is some competent filmmaking right here, boy.
Yeah. Do you think all of the things Pennywise turned into had a wonky eye because Skarsgård has a wonky eye, or is that just a stylistic
choice?
Of course,
dude. When Muschietti saw that he could do that eye droop thing,
I don't think
on
he
command.
Can, I don't think he can do that. I think he just does that.
No, he does it. Like, he does it on command.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
So
I thought he just had a wonky eye.
So Muschietti's just like, right, dude, we're drooping all the eyes. Everything's going to have a droopy eye. The spider's going to have a droopy eye. The fucking everything. The old lady's gonna have a droopy eye. She's gonna do a silly little dance in the background.
Oh man, that lady, like, see, that comedy there was at least funny. The rest of the stuff fell really flat. But when she actually ran out and she was that weird creature with her saggy tits swinging, it was kind of scary, but the CG was so fucking polished that it just, it was laughable.
Yeah.
She just
came
off as a giant joke.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, like, if they have the power to just say, it's not real, and everything goes away, hold on, I wanted to bring this up a while ago, like, because I have a really fucking big problem with how all of this goes down, because they essentially stop being friends when they're, like, what, 13?
Yeah,
They all move away.
A little younger, but
and then 27
that.
Years later, so they're now, like, in their early 40s. And somebody calls them up out of the blue, somebody who they don't even remember at first. And they're like, damn, we totally did make a promise to my 13-year-old friend 27 years ago. I better uproot my entire fucking life to go back to Derry. Like, and if you've
well, there's
forgotten
something
like
beyond the words that compels them and draws them there. Yeah. You know?
Is there though? Because they've all forgotten it. Well, if you've forgotten it, it's like, well, no. End, like, if I don't remember while I'm away from Derry, then why the fuck would I want to go back to Derry?
Yeah. This is supernatural. You got to remember, this is supernatural. They're bonded to it. They're bonded to the town.
And also understand that Derry...
I get that. That's why the shit on their hand disappears at the end.
Derry in the novel is a character. You know, it has a magnetic pull, and it does, you know, it does bring people in from the outside, and it Pennywise wants them and Derry wants them. And so, you know, the moment they remember a little bit, they're like, fuck it, gotta go back.
Now, was it just me or did it feel like Pennywise didn't even like remember them? And then he kind of saw him and was like, oh shit, those guys, that's right.
It felt very unceremonious. It felt very non-personal. I agree. Like, you know, like, yeah.
For it's all like, the talk. Oh, damn, they're back. I forgot all about them.
For all the talk and the buildup for this. And also the thing is, on the other end of it, that's what I mean with all, like, you remember when they go to their underground lair in the midsection?
Yeah, I don't remember that from the first one.
Okay, but they go there and then it shows, it flashes back to them as kids. Like, when the movie does that, it stops dead in its fucking tracks, dude. Like, I literally was spacing. I was thinking about my work day. Yep. I was like, I was all over the place in those scenes, dude. And then I'd come back to it and then I'm listening to the dialogue and everything's all forced. And it's trying so hard to on one end, it's very, like you said, it's kind of, it doesn't feel like he really knows them when he sees them.
Yeah.
On the other end, this is acting like Lord of the Rings. It's acting like I've spent fucking, like, hours and hours and hours with these people.
Like, and well, and
like, it's really trying to earn deep sentiment.
And like, they haven't done anything like Lord of the Rings to just really fully develop who these characters are. It's like, they all kind of have, like, one or two things that's, like, their token. It's like, oh, he's the crass funny one and she's the damaged, you know, redhead, like you said.
No, there's no fucking Gollum.
And what's odd too is that, like, the totems seem to have varying levels of importance to the characters. Like, some of them it's like this deeply, deeply meaningful thing. Like, it's a page out of a yearbook that Bev signed that he's had for 27 years. And then the other one's just like, oh, it's a shower cap.
Right.
Like, what?
Wait, so Finn Wolfhard was Richie, right?
Yes. The dude, glasses. The kid
that
glasses.
makes the fucking, his totem makes so much more sense.
Like, why that?
Because I was just like, I don't get why this fucking token is so important. He just wanted to, like, play a video game and they called him a faggot, like, I don't get it, but, like, now thinking about it,
he was renting all that space in his head. What do you?
Yeah. Well, no, he find, like, knowing that he had that love story with Eddie, like, that feels like that was one of the first times maybe he fully, like, kind of understood his sexuality, and he found.
And then
really
Eddie,
another
look at
kid
Eddie. Eddie had that overbearing, overweight mother. He went and got with an overbearing, overweight lady who tells him what to do.
Well, but I mean,
so,
like,
he's a closet.
Yeah,
case.
Richie.
Well,
in
but
the,
I mean,
that,
with Richie's
that
totem.
Scene in, that scene in the arcade.
Yeah,
you're talking specifically where he's like, "Well, do you want to play another game?"
Yeah, and, that scene specific because I'm like, why does the coin matter so much? But like the fact that at the end of that scene, the bullies call him a faggot. It's like, now that you guys have told me about that whole thing, I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. He found somebody that he gets along with and he relates to. Maybe he has, like, a little feeling about this guy. And he's like, hey, man, like, you don't have to leave. Like, we can still hang out a little bit if, like, time or money is the key
it's
here.
It's oddly one of the more well-wrought and, like, engaging aspects of the movie.
Dude, you know, like, knowing with the homosexual thing, like, it's really making me appreciate Richie as a character now. Because when you... like, you watch shows like Louie and stuff like that, and they have comedians that talk about who they are in real life. And a lot of them are talking about how they're repressed or not repressed, but depressed. And they have, you know, like, a lot of deep seated trauma and stuff like that. And so, like, that makes a lot of sense with Richie. Like, he can't actually be who he really is. And, like, makes him so much more of an interesting character.
The Richie side story is very touching and it's very well done. And it's unfortunate that it's fucking just like in a hurricane of
other, like, we've got
fucking, special effects.
We've got Bev and Ben, and you know, they've loved each other this entire time. Yep. And
he's hot now.
And how many fucking times do I have to hear?
Thank God he's not fat no more.
Ember, how many fucking times do I have to hear this goddamn poem?
Winter
again?
Fire.
For fuck's sake, dude.
Like that's not even a good poem.
It's a very repetitive fucking movie, yeah. Dude. It really is. Yeah. The story's kind of about how history repeats itself too. Like it's like, and so does the movie.
Cool. Yeah, it's already like the issue with it and Pennywise.
The
is
ending
that
repeats the first one's ending.
It's already we've already established that. Yeah, he comes back every 27 years. We've got it. You don't have to keep hammering me on the goddamn head that the story's going to repeat itself. Like, let's have some fucking subtlety and please. Well, here's the thing.
It doesn't trust his audience.
Here's what I do want to see. And I've heard that there is a super cut.
Yeah, a super director's cut or something that's
where,
really fucking long.
I don't think
that will help those dramatic moments that don't
work. Well, I just think that because you remember what was effective about the first movie or the original miniseries is when the adults, it would go a little bit with the adults and then it would flash back to the kids.
Right.
You would have that moment. And then it would catch up again.
Which is always hard to pull off. Flashbacks, it's why in like screenwriting classes, they're like, don't do flashbacks unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
And this whole motherfucker is just a huge flashback. So I think that if it's done properly, I think that there's a coherent...
Where it doesn't feel rushed and too long at the same time.
3.5 hour thing that included both movies that would be okay.
Well, yeah, because this part, chapter two, is as long as the entire miniseries, the original miniseries. Yeah.
Well, and about this ending thing.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, like, the big thing.
The power of self-esteem and imagination.
Let me point out something before I forget. I don't want to finish this thing and not mention this. The part where the guy's in midair with the deadlights and his fucking Pennywise's mouth is all the way back and fucking looks all like a Lovecraft monster.
That part was tight.
That shit looked fucking cool. And that was eerie as fuck.
Yeah, Bill Hader's yelling something like, come get it, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, this is good. That's good. They got him.
Like, so, they got the money to do this right here. Yeah. So like, cool.
Here's the issue with the ending. And if you haven't seen this movie by now, spoilers.
How does it end in the book? Because I've tried to read that book, but it's all
fucking
book.
Well, I've heard that's before, because I know you've read it. My understanding is the book has its detractors, correct?
Yes.
The ending's a little all over the fucking... It's crazy.
The ending to the book is so difficult to explain.
It works as literature and that's it.
It's got a fucking cosmic turtle and...
Do you recognize the irony in how like the guy writes books in this and they're talking about how he doesn't know how to end a book and this movie didn't
Stephen
know how to
King, and just because he says that you think we're going to let you off for your shitty ending?
Yeah, nope. Stephen King has had trouble ending books his entire career. Like it's kind of
He's good at spinning stuff. He wants to keep it going.
The thing is
he starts spinning too many things and he's like, "Oh fuck, I got to do something with all of these plates."
How do I resolve all this shit?
It's the same problem with
earthquake, all the plates fell.
Fucking Lost. Let's explain the polar bear. Fuck it, don't explain it.
Same issue with if you've read Under the Dome. It's one of those deals where, you know, he's got like 40 characters he's introduced you to and by the like midpoint of the movie you're like, "Dude, we haven't seen 30 of these people in the last, you know, 1,000 pages." So it ends up they're like, well, this group of people dies and then this group of people dies and then this group of people dies. So he's always had that fucking problem. It is no stranger to that. Like, they basically have a psychic battle with an intergalactic spider with a galactic turtle that is dead as their like backup. It's fucking bonkers, dude. Like there's no sense of it. Like, there isn't like, oh man, if they only had done what's in the book, it would have made more sense.
See, but on this, they literally put it in the same category as Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and fucking Bill Nye the Science Guy. If you don't believe in him, he doesn't exist.
Here's the issue with it. Hold on.
You fucking hold on.
You hold on, dude. The issue with it is at least in the novel, The reason why I kind of was hoping that they were going to delve more into the cosmic horror aspect of it is because their power doesn't come from just talking shit to Pennywise. Their power comes from sort of an outward force that is channeled through them in order to be able to defeat
Pennywise.
They're like the necessary compensation.
They're a conduit for
the existence of Pennywise.
Right.
It's like the duality.
So they're
it's
not like, they're not going up to him and fucking, "Oh, you little bitch." That's not hurting.
They literally call him a bully at one point. And yeah. I mean, that's what this felt like, was they were taking the power back and they were just calling him all these names like, "You're a bully, you're a stupid clown." And it's like,
here, the thing is not, this is probably an overreading of it, but I'm trying to give it credit because I understand this if it has it going on. He appears as a manifestation of their fears. So in a sense, he's bound by their
leper.
Yeah, he's bound by their perception of him, but he turns that to his advantage by preying on their fears.
Right.
But they realize if he's bound by our perception, then we have to make sure he knows our perception. We have to change our perception. And that's like, that's how shit works in general, like with trauma, with all sorts of stuff. You have to weaponize yourself with the trauma.
Yeah, you got to weaponize your trauma in order to defeat it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I've gone to great lengths to expand my throat. Never mind. Well, it's an Undertow reference. But anyway, so on paper, that sounds fine.
Naked and famous.
In the film, you have people yelling at fucking Pennywise and then ripping his heart out because he turns into goo.
Yeah, he starts sniveling and like just curling up into like this little baby.
That's,
and like, what was with the whole power of imagination thing where they're like,
imagination,
the spear kills monsters if you believe it does. And it's like, okay, well then my piss is holy water. Like, I'm just going to go piss on him and he'll catch on fire because I believe that doesn't make sense.
The power of belief is but see, it's real shit.
Again, it's not,
people believe, never mind. I'm not going
to, at least.
But I mean, to take an inanimate object and say, if you believe this is going to do something, it's going to do something.
Okay, so here's
why
a little,
not just cheat? Why not just pick up like little pebbles and be like, these are all fireballs?
Yeah. So, well, stardust. If you remember from the original miniseries, they do that whole thing where this is battery acid, you scum, and then you know how is the fucking silver going to hurt him? It's, you know, just because it's not because they believe it. It's because the fucking higher power, whether it be the good end of this battle,
the polarity, the other side of that polarity,
that power is going through them with their belief. The problem with this film is that they don't, it never
makes that connection.
You don't have like a higher power that has made any sort of presence to make you believe that. Like, this is one of those instances where like prayer is effective. Thoughts and prayers in this realm worked
because it's about intention. It's focused intention.
It's focusing power. And so the whole business about them, like, you're just a clown. You're a bully with a fucking stupid nose and silly hair. Yeah. Like, that shit is goofy as
and
fuck.
And extremely anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Extremely. But, yeah, they're fucking yelling at him, dude.
Yeah, they're yeeting.
How do they beat Pennywise after this buildup of 5 hours, five and a half hours?
Now, what was the point of, what's his name, the bully? Because I remember you saying when we tried to read
Eddie
the book,
Bowers,
that
dude,
felt very Stephen King.
When we tried
I
to read
that
the book,
ripped
you
right
were
out of the
like,
book, but it was
"He
all
is
over the place.
Such a fucking piece of shit in the book. He's so crazy."
Eddie and Bowers, like, dude, is criminally.
He had no point in this. Like, he stabbed Eddie in the face, which was badass. That knife through the cheek was fucking rad. He just popped up and he's like, "Ah, bitch."
Well, I love the idea that King, this is obviously King, this is from the book, you could tell because it's a good idea that Pennywise is going to use, he's going to have pawns to do stuff that he can't always do in the physical plane, right?
Pennywise can also like reanimate the dead because Bowers was rolling around with a fucking zombie. Which I would honestly love to see like a buddy cop movie with Bowers and the zombie.
Bowers and a zombie. Yeah, I mean that's again one of those things where
Bowers and a zombie.
Yeah.
Where Bowers is supposed to be this sort of like oppressive presence in throughout the whole.
He was more of a nuisance in this. Like,
yeah, like, he was just kind of like a fly on the wall where he's just like, get out of here.
It's Eddie. Like, oh shit, fucking, you're still here? Oh shit, you stabbed me in the face and now you're dead.
Yeah. Again,
his name wasn't Eddie, was it?
Henry. I googled it.
Eddie Bauer is a motherfucker that makes SUVs.
Makes tents.
I was like, is his name really fucking Eddie Bauer? Did I miss that? How did I miss that?
Is he gay too?
I mean, he was hella gay. I think he probably had some latent homosexual tendencies too. I wouldn't doubt it. All that aggression, like, he just really craved some D. His knife is all super phallic and he put it in Eddie's mouth. Like, hell think yeah. about it, dude.
Hell yeah.
Think about it.
Just think about it. Okay, Jessica Chastain, I fucking love her as an actress.
Me too, man.
And when they announced that she was playing the grown-up Beverly, I'm like, that's stoked. Fucking great. That is fantastic. And that she doesn't really get to do much here, dude.
No.
She just that she does do is just fucking
irritating. She gets to be a helpless woman again, which is kind of like, fuck, man. Like,
and I mean, like, okay, so the
and McAvoy, I'm like, I like McAvoy too, but he kind of feels going through the motions because his lines aren't very the script here. I'm not saying it's all bad dialogue, but the dialogue just doesn't have much crackle to it. Like you said, it tries to be funny.
See, and I know somebody's going to come on here and make a comment about how, like, the movie is portraying characters that were written for a certain time. And it's like, well, I get that still, but, like, if you're going to change or if you're going to take liberties with the story, why make Bev just, like, a helpless woman?
Yeah.
Like, why make her be, like, so fucking oblivious that she doesn't see that Ben was the one that loved her all along? Because who's the other? Mike? Is that the other guy?
Yeah.
Like, Mike had not a romantic bone in his body. You think he's going to write that fucking poem for you? Like, she's just so fucking clueless.
What it is, like you said earlier, it's kind of one-dimensional. Like if you all have, the characters yeah, if you have that, like, okay, but you need to...
She's got no... The thing is she's got no teeth, and she comes across like a mewling kitten the entire time.
She definitely has teeth.
And
I saw them.
Very nice teeth.
Gorgeous. Very nice everything.
George is like, actually, I could look, and none of those are fake, and actually, she's never had a cavity.
Her teeth are real.
Yeah.
Hmm.
He'll do that, dude. If you watch like a movie with him, he'll sit there and he'll be like,
no, as far as I can tell, either they're
ever teeth here, look in my mouth again.
Either, like, these teeth here are fake.
Either her teeth are real, or she's got a hell of a cosmetic dentist.
I mean.
Or both.
¿Por qué no los dos?
What?
Okay. Sure. And why so I both? Just I come out of it and I go, well, fucking Bev was kind of a clawless cat.
Like, I mean, they honestly could have killed at least three of those characters and still had a more compelling movie.
They could have had Bill Hader just fucking being awesome the whole movie.
He could have just started doing stand up to Pennywise and that been the end of it. And I was like, all right, well, I right? guess that's good enough for me.
I got over my fear of being on stage, so And wait,
what's the deal with clowns? Let me give you
about this again, dude. Here's we go again with this. I wanted to mention this with another movie this summer. Remember Scary Stories, blah blah blah.
To tell in the dark. Scary Stories, blah blah blah.
You're gonna have to be more specific.
Fucking voiceover.
Yeah.
And this movie, and it's fucking voiceover. Stop it. Like,
is there a voiceover? I don't even remember.
Very rarely, Mike. Will a voiceover fucking is it even necessary in a movie? Because number one, it's a fucking movie. You're showing me what happens.
And if you have 3 hours to do that, you don't need to tell me a goddamn thing.
Like, you are showing me, dude. Like, show me, right? But you're fucking showing me while you tell me. And it's fucking like...
You're getting lectured to while you're watching a goddamn movie.
And it's like, that schmaltzy shit at the end, like, that's the thing about the past. Like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Yeah.
This is not Forrest Gump, dude. Like, stop. And Scary Stories did the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie we mentioned earlier, God bless it, The Fanatic.
Yeah, but The Fanatic does it with aplomb.
They do it with fucking gusto.
It has that je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
That movie is no mewling kitten.
No,
that's for sure.
But yeah, I've fucking had it with these voiceovers.
Yeah, well, dude, the whole nonsense with this ending with Stanley, you know, taking one for the team, and I knew you wouldn't do this if it wasn't, you know, if I wasn't there. Again, it's like Pennywise is just kind of like, oh, yuck, like, oh, you're not.
Well, that was easy.
You're not that scared of me, are you? Like. Yeah.
I mean, like, originally, that's exactly what it felt like, was Pennywise is so terrifying that this guy is just going to off himself rather than even consider, like, he remembers that Pennywise is a thing, and he's like, oh, fuck, like, I don't even want to, he didn't have to go back to Derry, he's just like,
fuck it.
I'm going to fucking kill myself, because fuck that, but then they're like, no, I did it so you guys can defeat him, because I knew I would only slow you down, it's like,
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
It wasn't that he was going to slow them down.
No, he wouldn't have like the balls to go through with it.
It was the only way that the team would be united, was to have like a thing to root for, or, you know, to
No, didn't he say specifically?
Devastated, like, that he fucking killed himself.
Well, that's what I mean. What's what I mean? Like, I don't.
Well, they didn't know he killed himself for a while. Like he said, he said that the only way that they would be able to defeat Pennywise was if they were like all on the same page. And he was basically saying that he was too much of a chicken that he could never go through with it. So this was the only way because he took himself out of the equation. Like he literally said, took myself out of the equation.
It's bullshit. It's bullshit.
And I'm like, so you did this thinking of everybody else? Like maybe I'm just a selfish motherfucker, dog. But if like. Any of my friends called me and were like, hey, you need to come to this other side of town because people are going to die if you don't live up to a promise that you made 27 years ago. I'd be like, dog, I'm not going to Chula Vista. That's fucking far.
You're like, we were fucking kids.
I'm like, do I know these people? What the fuck do I care?
I don't even have glasses. Yeah,
I don't even
talk to my parents.
I don't even remember that town. Like,
I don't even know my mom's birthday, motherfucker. Right? I'm just kidding.
George kind of looked up like, do I know my mom's birthday?
Yeah, I was like, do I
do know my mom's, yes.
I know my mom's because she reminds me every year that I forgot it or that I didn't get her anything for it. Fuck, dude. It's January 4th, mom. I fucking know when it is.
Oh, she's a Capricorn.
Yeah, she
like
is.
Me.
That means we're compatible.
Like me. Fuck my mom,
are you
dude.
Pennywise
that's
right now, dude?
Whoa, I haven't met her.
Did you just Pennywise this right now? Like me.
Like me.
I missed you. Oh, I missed you.
And she'd just be like, Rhett, you're not actually that buff. And Rhett would go, no.
I'm not though.
She's like, how much do you even deadlift? And he's like, I don't like doing deadlifts.
I've only deadlifted once.
Your back's not that big. Oh, no. Don't tell me that.
God damn, you guys say things and then you tear me down. You know?
I mean, that's the whole
thing. You're
point.
The one who made me think my back was big.
You're the one.
Well, for Matt, it would be like, that mustache sucks.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, it does right now. I fucked it up when I trimmed it. Somebody complimented it today, so it made me feel a little better.
It looks all actually groomed right now. And
does it? It's fucking wild right now.
You don't need it groomed. You need it to be fucking.
Just fucking Zoidberg.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Like,
So that brings up an interesting point. Like, if Pennywise is the manifestation of their fears, like, what would Pennywise turn himself into to get to you?
Crippling depression.
He's already doing it.
What? He's already.
He's winning.
He's just every time I look in the mirror, I just see him.
We are weaponizing.
Like,
we are weaponizing.
Just looking like me.
I've weaponized my own fears against myself
with the podcast.
I am Pennywise for me.
There you go.
I'm my own Pennywise.
You took everyone's answer right now.
Got him.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's kind of it.
Crippling anxiety.
Crippling. Key word, dude. Wow.
No, I guess he wouldn't disguise himself as the crippling anxiety. He would disguise himself as the situation that forced you to face your crippling anxiety.
It would just be parties. It would be parties all the time.
Yep.
Like, hey, you want to go to a party? No.
Parties where everybody wants to come up to you and talk to you about like some shit that you don't like.
It's when you agree to do something and then like the day comes and you didn't cancel it soon enough.
You're just hoping that they
fucking. So you have to either come up with like a fucking actual emergency.
Or when you have good friends like us, we just expect you to flake.
Hold the
so we
fuck
don't
on.
Count on you being there
Hold
anyway.
Hold the fuck on. I was actually sick on Friday. I was sick. I wasn't at work, fucks. I wasn't.
Sick of creating excuses as to why he can't hang out.
No, I want to hang out. I do. I love hanging out with you guys.
I love you.
What
I
do we do Friday? We were going
to
have lunch.
Oh, we went
and
to
then,
lunch.
And then my wife got root canals.
And I was fucking sick. Wait a minute.
I'm hella sick, dog. Hella.
What would yours be, Matthew?
I don't even know, dude. Like,
it's people, man. I tell you, people. Hell is other
hell
people.
Hell is other people.
Yeah,
I'm not just saying they all suck. Man. And that's the thing. Let me qualify that because people are like, God, that's fucking negative. That's pessimistic. Look, the thing
it is.
Well, it's not.
No, I mean, hell is other people. It's not pessimistic. It's real.
Well, it's just like sometimes you need to. It's very draining. You need to fucking get back to yourself. And
I think
and
the listeners of this show, I think we're all pretty much kindred spirits, man. I think that we've created a community of misanthropes.
Yeah.
And I kind of love it.
People who hate people. That's fucking great. I mean, I guess for me, he would present himself as somebody who wants to have a conversation in a group where everyone is really passionate and knowledgeable about that thing. And I just don't know anything or I don't fucking care. So
yours,
I just stand
yours
there silent.
Yours would be
like,
friends canceling on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. He would. Exactly. He
well,
would
no
just
one
be,
likes abandoned.
He would just be a bunch of people making plans with me and then everybody canceling either that or nobody responding to my invite or
that's
my text.
The one. Yeah. No. Yours would be
that's the extroversion thing.
You spend $400 on tickets to a thing.
Yep.
And everybody bailed on you.
All eight people bail, and I'm like, what the fuck, dude? What the fuck? I gotta go to this by myself now.
Well, and like no one cares about you.
Yeah, right, that's the thing.
But see, no one likes that. But see, like even that's why even my you, George, is so like
important to me, dude.
You, if you were never invited to anything.
See? Oh yeah, no, that kills.
That does.
Yeah, kill. I don't like. I want to be given the option to decline. Yeah.
Or you know what else it would be? It would be when like I introduce two of my friends and then they hang out with
them. Oh, that one kills.
Yeah. Yeah, wait, does, see, you know what's weird? I always, doesn't it? That happened to me a lot in my life.
That one
tell Bones and Steve I said hi.
No, I fucking liked that when it happened, though. It always made me feel like
no, because I'm like, what the fuck I introduced you to? You both are my friends. Why can't I hang out with the two of you as well, you sons of bitches?
I like that, though. It's like you're a matchmaker, but not for fucking. It's like, like, wow, you guys get along better without me. See, cool. Go look, fuck away from me.
That does kill, but I also understand the need for it. Because
well, it means you're a bridge between people, dude.
There are times when...
It just means I get walked on, dude.
I get walked on.
I get walked on, and then I get burned.
Because you can take it, dude.
That's the power that you've been given, dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
What were you going to say, George?
I don't remember I'm anymore.
We don't do this ever, but this is one where I feel because it's such a mixed bag, meaning it does a lot of things well, as far as, well, Matt doesn't seem to agree with some of that, but like I think some of the set pieces are very fucking impressive.
Yes.
And I think some moments are very effective.
I mean, I agree with you.
But I mean, so if you were giving this a star rating out of 5, like how would you end up with this?
2.5.
I'm a solid 2.5 on this.
It's just so down the middle that like I don't love it, but I don't hate it. I just don't care.
In a large way, I feel almost like it has more of everything that was in the first one, including more... It has more badly timed humor.
Yeah.
It has more corny stuff. It has more set pieces. It has more special effects.
It has more shit that I don't care about.
Right. Truthfully, I mean, that's the biggest thing is that the comedy it does have,
it 90%
of it is tone deaf and kind of crap.
See, and I know I've brought this up, but like take the movie Stand By Me. Like how would that
fucking movie.
How would that movie fare if they weren't kids, you know, just entering like who they are as people, if they were adults and like they went through like the similar story, I don't fucking care. It's the kids. It's all this stuff happening to people who have not experienced this kind of stuff that makes it so impactful for me. But when they're adults, it's like, I don't care, dog. I got my own fucking problems. But when you're a kid, everything is serious. Everything is next level shit.
Everything hasn't been stripped of that. Well, yeah.
Yeah. You haven't had the weight of the world crush you and kill your spirit.
Whoa, you guys. Are you guys crushed? Your spirits been killed?
Every day of my life, bro. Yeah.
Damn, since my first day of kindergarten, dude.
You don't hate Mondays. You hate capitalism, dude.
Since the first time somebody forgot my birthday, dude.
Yeah, dude. When my little brothers are getting birthdays and I'm older than them, I haven't had a single one. Fuck that shit.
Well, see, the beginning of the cracks in the thing is the Santa Claus narrative. Once it because you got to think. No, seriously, no one ever talks about this. It's really fucked up. There's no reason, no fucking reason to keep this thing going where they're going to lie to fucking. They tell you that this dude is going to give you this shit that doesn't exist. And then, like, it's a big fucking thing. You wait all year for this motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you know what? We were just playing. Like,
just kidding, idiot.
And you know what? Everything's like that. Well, there is no Santa Claus.
Yeah, and then they're like,
it's all Wizard of Oz bullshit trickery.
Santa's a state of mind.
It's an idea, dude.
Yeah, it's really like, if you believe, then, like, he's real. And, I mean, that's kind of the same thing with fucking Pennywise. It's like, Pennywise is essentially Will Ferrell in Elf. You know, it's like, you got to get the fucking people to believe so that Santa can go and do his thing. It's like, well, people got to believe. Otherwise, fucking Pennywise can't torture you. And if it's that easy, then wouldn't it just like go away once you become an adult? And how does Pennywise come back if 27 years pass and nobody's afraid of him because like, you know, 27 years have passed.
I get one of the big reasons, George, this has stuck around as long as it has, and it's as iconic as it is because of the thematic heft of it, right? The metaphor, the symbolism about childhood and growing up and trauma and all that stuff, right? And that's why it's it. It's this big, vague thing, whatever it is, right?
But what's it?
But from a story standpoint, it's always struck me as goofy that, I mean, this is a very unambitious space demonic clown. Like, why the fuck is he holed up in a sewer in a small fucking town?
Yeah. Because well, that's where he landed.
Yeah, that's where he landed.
Well, that's fucking ridiculous. Why is that's unacceptable.
Why is the alien still at Outpost 31 in the thing?
He's like a backwoods fucking clown demon. Like, he sucks, dude. Like, that's really not very...
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, that's the whole deal is that Pennywise is kind of pathetic. Like, he preys on kids, and he uses a clown as his way to get in. And so, yeah, Pennywise is not, like, you know, not a fucking brilliant villain. Well, he's kind of a fucking piece of shit.
Okay. Well, good job.
And that's why he preys on kids, because kids are fucking dumb.
Kids are dumb. I feel like, my kids would fucking fall for Pennywise real quick.
That's another good fucking point. It's like, I mean, with the kids, like, how does he doesn't present himself as like, something fear-inducing in the children. He's just like, hey, I'm a cute clown. Like, come over here. And then he fucking eats them. But with the adults, it's like, oh, I'm a physical manifestation of your fear and all that. And actually, why didn't he just appear as Pennywise more to the actual kids? Like, he had to instead appear as a leper and, like, a creepy-ass old lady and, like...
Well, that's the thing. How few scenes in this use actual horror filmmaking? By that, I mean in a way that's not just pull the curtain back and now something's there.
Yeah.
It really leans into spectacle.
Again.
Like, how often does he show up? Skarsgård, without CGI. Like, very few times is it just him in a tense scene.
Yeah.
Well, the scenes with Bill Hader are the shining stars. Yeah. Where he's, you know, where he's out in that park and in the background, all the people just stop. And they sway kind of back
and forth.
They
had a really interesting, like, color palette change there, too. Like, where when he first walks out, it's really bright and kind of orangey yellow.
Yeah, it was a little sepia-ish.
It just turns a little blue. Yeah. Like, once... I don't know what the significance of that was. Like, Pennywise had kind of gotten his hooks into him, or, like, he was feeding off of his fear, or why there was that change in color. But then it went away. Like, they, you know, I thought, well, this is a really interesting choice. I wonder if, like, they just filmed at a different time of the day and they missed that
continuity check. That's on purpose.
But, well, no, yeah, exactly. Something... Then it went back to, like, bright and sunny. And I'm like, okay, well, that's intentional, but what's the significance? And that's the thing, is there's so much stuff in here.
The palette swap, who knows?
There's so much stuff in here that, like, I feel like they thought they were very intelligent and clever for doing. But you really have to watch it a few times to kind of pick up on it. Like, I mean, like, the whole, you know, Bill Hader thing, like, I didn't get that at all. But now it makes a lot more of his development make sense. And I don't know if they have that for all the other characters, but I was just so bored that I failed to notice that.
Right.
And, like, the fucking totems, like, getting the rock with the blood on it. Like, how did you find the fucking rock that had Henry Bauer's blood on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That stuff.
You just held on to that for 27 years and you just managed to bring it with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, I mean, George just walked off somewhere, but I guess. Okay. I mean,
you can't go pee.
I guess that's pretty much it, right?
Like, yeah. I think we've dove into it chapter two.
Yeah. I mean, we could get more into it, but, like, honestly, it's.
It's a very, very, very overt three-act structure, like most things are. But I mean, like, that dude, it just kills it for me. But that second, the bulk of the movie is the middle.
Yeah.
And by the time I get to the
middle is long and boring.
It's long as fuck. And that's this tricky thing here. Like, I feel like I need their characters fleshed out more, right? So the movie needs to be longer. But on the other hand, I feel like it's too long because the time they were allotted.
Well, it's because of the stuff
they just repeated themselves.
It's because of the stuff they chose to put in there. Like how I said, everyone needed their own little exposition for every little thing that happened.
It's that,
like,
structure.
You don't fucking need that, dude. Like, you
can't have that flimsy a structure for a 3-hour fucking movie, dude.
You know, or just show us, like, Mike calling two people and their reactions and then have them kind of just quickly talk about, like, yeah, when Mike called me, I vomited or something.
Yeah, you get the gist of it, right?
But, yeah, don't just fucking show me every single person reacting to Mike. Mike who? Everybody's phone rings. It's like, Derry? That's weird.
Oh, bitch.
And it's like, who do I know in Derry? And it's like, hello? Mike who? Oh, Mike. Yeah, no. Hey, how's it going? And just over and over. Everybody else. And then it's like, oh.
I remember Jessica Chastain leaving her husband. Like, you're not going anywhere, bitch. I'm like, oh, bitch.
Yeah, man. And again, it's one of the few times that the original miniseries has a little bit more balls than than this movie. Like, dude, in the original miniseries, that scene with Bev and her husband is like, fuck, real uncomfortable.
What I mean, I know I said this already, but I really felt like there was not enough Pennywise in this. Alia made the comment that, you know, he tormented them through the whole movie. And it's like, well, did he really? Because I feel like for being a 3-hour movie, Pennywise was probably on screen for about 25 minutes.
No, yeah, because he kept that. Yeah, well, that's what we covered. He's appearing as all this other stuff, which is not very menacing.
Right.
It's just, I mean, some of it's effective while it's going on because it's a spectacle, like the old lady.
Well, yeah. And the Paul Bunyan thing.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's well done.
But the leper, it's like, I already saw that in the first one, dog. Like, you ain't got nothing new.
Yeah, I'm not mad at the movie for being ambitious. It's just, you know, like, it's a classic thing where a little less is more, maybe, dude. Like, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, it's
and it
weird.
Ends with a whimper.
It's weird because, like, you want less of
Pennywise whimper,
less
like
of a lot
bitch.
And more of
I want more character development, like actual character development, but less. It's like all exposition, dude.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
all exposition for the inevitable climax where they yell at him. Like, I can't wait to see them yell at him. You're like, you watch, dude. They're gonna yell at him, and it's gonna be badass.
It's gonna be sick as fuck.
Like, fuck, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I'm in a weird spot because I wanna. I guess I want people to watch it, but ultimately, like, I think most people are gonna be kind of fucking bored,
dude. Mitch Snyder hated it.
But if you haven't watched,
he's all, what a pile of shit. Yeah, I want it to be like the podcast, the post, or the movie. Be specific, man.
We get it, Mitch. We get it.
I want to be like, you're a pile. No, I wouldn't do that.
You're a pile of shit. No, Mitch is.
Yeah, he seems like good people.
Yeah, Mitch is a good dude.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, look, you've probably seen it. I'm sure it's made a gajillion dollars, and they're all high fiving each other back at.
I think it was something like 200 million
Hollywood.com.
Worldwide, 291 million domestic. Trailing the first one's open by about 15, but that's only the second biggest opening in September, because
it went up against Fnatic on its release day.
That's exactly why Fnatic drained short. A lot of the. Fnatic certainly has taken its place in my head since I've seen it.
It definitely took its place on the release calendar.
In fact, the Fnatic is a bigger film to me now than Star Wars Episode 9. What do you think, George? Star Wars Episode 9 or the Fnatic?
Shit, man. I would much rather watch the Fnatic again, to be honest with you.
Ollie is going to be like, let's go watch the new Star Wars.
Nope.
I'm like, let's watch Fnatic first.
Yeah. Dude, I'm going to say go watch The Fnatic instead of watching It Chapter 2.
I mean, I would. Like, if anybody asked me which
kidding.
One I'd rather watch.
I mean, ultimately, The Fnatic is what it is, but I expected so much more from this fucking movie. And I just ended up fucking disappointed again with these fucking Stephen King adaptations, and I'm getting kind of...
And the unfortunate thing about this one is...
I'm getting kind of dick shy.
It did that kind of thing where... not every cool scene, but a lot of the cool scenes were in the trailer. Yeah. Maybe not to the extent
not
like
the
when
coolest
you see,
ones.
Well, when you see Pennywise with the balloons and he's flying over, like that looked really menacing.
And,
in
his,
the trailer.
And his makeup on his face and he's dragging his finger across his face.
Yeah. And I mean, all of that is explored in the trailer and the whole Bev with the old lady.
Oh, my father.
Almost that in... No, she says Faja.
Oh, when she gets in the apartment, I just turned off. I'm like, okay, I saw this in the trailer, and then it went on like 5 times longer. And I'm like, ugh.
And the only difference was like, you see the woman run out on the trailer, but in this one, you see that she's a weird CGI thing with big flappy tits.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you saw the first one, I mean, watch the second one, but I'm like one of those people that will watch an entire series even if it starts sucking halfway
through. I'll say this. When... Or if they create a sort of supercut of this thing, I'll revisit.
You let me know.
I'll revisit it and I'll see how that is. I think, again, I'm being probably too kind. I think there's a good movie here somewhere.
I 100% do not care to watch this again.
Yeah.
Because I like the first one so much, man. Like, I think, that's the same thing that happened with the original miniseries. Like, the stuff with the kids is where it's
maybe, just maybe, the source material isn't ended that well.
Or again, yeah, maybe just end the first chapter, make it more bombastic, and then that be it.
I mean,
like, you know what I mean? Like, just end it. Just be done with the first.
Do either of you guys know offhand how long the first one was?
The first movie?
Yeah.
I think it was like almost 2 hours.
See, if you could make combined be like 3.5 to 4 hours, I'm in.
I'd but say
like,
I'd
the
say
fact that it's fucking between 5 and 6 for...
Make one film 3 hours flat.
Yeah, like and, they and did with the miniseries. People would
say, oh, you didn't have enough time. Bullshit. Bullshit. There's movies that accomplish a shitload of stuff in 3 hours.
Yeah,
yeah,
I completely agree.
Like if this and the first one were put together in 3 hours, you'd have one of the fucking, well, honestly, one of the tightest, best fucking horror movies I could think of. Yeah. Honestly, if you had this just as a tight 3 hours instead of 5.5,
yeah,
because that's what we're talking. The first one was 2.5 hours.
The adult
right?
stuff again is where this whole thing suffers,
and they crammed so much more into the adult.
But they didn't. That's the thing.
But I mean, they crammed so much unnecessary shit. Oh, you mean time wise?
Yeah. The substance just isn't there. You gonna go pee?
See.
All right. Yeah, man. Again. Just feeling kind of bad.
Everyone. I shouldn't say the majority. Enough of the listeners know you as a big Stephen King guy by now. I would think, right?
I would think, yeah.
Well, yeah, so you're a big Stephen King guy. What have been some of your favorite Stephen King adaptations?
Well, we got, let's see.
I know he hated The Shining because it wasn't like his book.
Yeah, the with the remake of The Shining movie. Have you seen
the TV one with the fucking animals running around?
That one's rough.
You know, but dude, it's closer to the book, so it's better.
I like the first It chapter. It was very good.
Right.
Room 1408. Was pretty good. The John Cusack joint.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Yeah.
Huh.
Langoliers, kind of ironically, I love.
The TV movie.
Yeah.
See, I haven't seen it, but I read the premise, and I think that's a cool... Well, obviously,
it's wacky.
Kind of, he's kind of good with premises.
It's wacky. premises he's got down.
Yeah.
Well,
no, I don't want to talk. I just, you know, it's
the Mist, fucking The King. Mist was great.
Right.
Despite Matt's fucking...
Frank Darabont stuff of his... I mean, Shawshank is Frank Darabont.
Shawshank is great.
Green Mile is Darabont.
And yeah.
So he's done really solid King adaptation. And he did The Mist.
Yeah.
The Mist sucks.
You're stupid.
The Mist is fucking terrible. It should have killed that kid from the beginning.
And then... trivia. What is the only film directed by Stephen King?
That's the truck one.
Yeah,
Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum motherfucking Overdrive.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk. Well, we'll talk
about how he shoehorned himself into.
Yeah,
this
the
movie.
Cameo wasn't too bad, I guess. But
I wish he would have talked shit about, like, you know, how Stephen King was a hack writer or something.
He kind of did.
Did he?
A little bit. Like, if you saw, he's like, I don't want your autograph. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anywho, all right. That's Who Goes Our Podcast for 228.
Yeah,
228. We'll see you next week when we talk about.
Tigers are not afraid.
Tigers are not afraid, or something. We'll decide last minute, probably.
Yeah. Something good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Might record another Patreon episode next
Maybe.
Week.
Maybe we'll see.
Yeah.
Depending on how time goes, time is precious.
Are you farting?
No.
Oh.
Wee. That's the noise of him
farting. Not, audibly, anyway. No, when I fart, it's more like.
That's not tight butthole.
Nope. It's a loose floppy butt.
All right, dummies. We'll see you next time.
Take big poops.
Go watch the Fanatic and then join Patreon and hear what we thought about it.
Yeah, because that's infinitely more interesting than this episode.
Bye, idiots. I hate your fucking guts.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be all right, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.